Welcome to Better Sex, where you get the information and inspiration to create and enjoy your best possible sex life. Join your host, sex therapist Jessa Zimmerman, as she brings you expert guests, helpful tips, knowledge, and strategies to improve your intimate relationships. And now, your host, Jessa Zimmerman.
Hey, it's Jessa. Welcome back to the Better Sex Podcast. Thank you so much for tuning in. I'm delighted to have you here. And if you have not yet seen my new webinar about how to enjoy physical intimacy without just the expectation and the pressure and the obligation to have sex, aimed at any of you who have lower desire than your partner, and maybe even feel like you've got little to no desire, it's all about really helping you cultivate your desire for sex. Not about having more sex, but about actually wanting sex, because that's really going to be crucial to create a sex life that is enduring. So that is my passion. That's where I've been going lately. If you would like to sign up for that, you can go to intimacywithease.com/masterclass and give that a watch. It's about an hour long. Hopefully you will enjoy it. Today's guest is Rachel Duffy, a friend, colleague of mine, who is a parenting coach. And you might be thinking, why in the world are we talking about parenting on a sex podcast? But the reason is because it's one of the big four topics that couples struggle with. One of the other ones is sex, but money, parenting, and in-laws. And the thing is, if you are struggling with your partner over parenting issues, over how to manage the kids, over how to respond to them, over how to raise them, then it is likely having an impact on your relationship in general and certainly on your sex life, at least over time. So we're going to dive into this about what do you do if you have differences with your partner over parenting so that you can feel like teammates and have each other's back, not that you have to agree 100%, but so this can stop being a barrier potentially to your sex life. So that's what we're talking about. I think you're going to learn a lot from Rachel. And before we start the show today, it is sponsored by Intimacy with Ease. It's a method to help otherwise happy couples achieve a sex life that is easy and fun for both of them so that you can actually just enjoy your sex life with zero stress. For more information, if you want to watch a brief little training video that's available, all of that, go to intimacywithease.com. Rachel, thanks so much for being on the show.
I'm so happy to be here with you, Jessa.
So I think I said this to you before, but in couples therapy, the big four are money, sex, in-laws, and parenting. So that's why I have you on a show about sex, because these big topics can cause real trouble for couples. And if they're struggling with something big, it's often going to take a toll in the bedroom. So first, would you just talk a little bit about who you are and why this topic matters to you? Like, what, why is it you're doing what you do?
Yeah. So I started out my career as a divorce attorney because caring for families and children's well-being has always been something I felt passionate about. And I thought that I could help families in a place where the family structure is breaking down. What I learned during the years that I was a litigator was that divorce law is really mostly psychology. There's a little bit of law thrown in there, but most of it's psychology. And at the time, I didn't have the tools. I wasn't a parent myself, and I was very young. I just couldn't deal with it in the way that felt productive. So I left it for a while, or I left it permanently, rather, and I just went into business because I love business. And when I became a parent, I understood so much that I didn't understand as a litigator. And I understood that I needed to reevaluate my entire belief system. I had to reevaluate everything I had grown up on. I had to question everything. There was a lot coming up for me on a personal level. So I did a lot of work on myself, dove deep into conscious parenting. And that really changed my life. So much so that I got certified as a conscious parenting coach. and decided that I was going to do everything I could to bring this message forth to other people. Truthfully, my mission with this is to help people alleviate their own suffering in parenting, in life, but mainly with their children.
Okay. Now, I know you are not going to be able to separate your conscious parenting training and proclivities from your conversation here, but I'm not specifically promoting that, although I'm sure I'm on board with the concepts. But I really want to talk about what two people do when they disagree about parenting. Not that there's one right answer, because this happens a lot, right? Parents are not going to come at this the same way.
I think it would be impossible for parents to be on the same page all the time because these are two individuals. So I think we have to first release that expectation that parents need to always be on the same page about everything. And even though I'm sure when people come together to enter a marriage, to enter parenthood, sure, they have, I'm sure, a lot of common values and beliefs and ideas about child rearing. But at the same time, as we evolve as humans, as adults, and things come up with our children that we can't predict and we can't expect. So those things bring with them challenge. I mean, really, if there is one thing I could guarantee you in a marriage, in parenting, and in life, it's that you're going to experience problems and pain and setbacks and friction and disconnection. Yeah. So you know, welcome to life. So yes, I think it not only is it common, it is normal.
Right, right. And no amount of conversations, like I remember somebody told me, I won't say who, oh, we talked all about this stuff before we got married, you know, thinking that they could anticipate everything and get it all worked out, you know, going in. And so they wouldn't have trouble down the road. But that's not the way it works.
It's impossible to do that because, to think that you could control how things are going to unfold is the way to set yourself up for a major disappointment.
Yeah. I was just talking to clients about this week, actually. How much do people need to be on the same page versus how much is it okay that one parent does, you know, parent A does it different than parent B? Because we can't be totally different, right? I mean, like I was, but it's, I'm sure it's not like a formula. Like,
that's a really interesting question. And I get this a lot from parents because when I work with parents, sometimes both parents come to me, but oftentimes only one parent is coming to me.
Uh-huh.
Right. And then I work with one parent and then they're telling me, okay, my spouse is doing the opposite of all of this.
Right. Right.
And then they worry, is this messing up the kids? Is it confusing the kids? What kind of implications does this have? And the truth is, I think we can trust our children a tiny bit with experiencing different things from different parents. So you're right. It can't be completely one parent is doing one thing and another parent is doing a complete opposite thing all the time.
Right.
I can tell you from my personal experience, there were years where I was on one path with my parenting and my husband was not on the same page with me at all. And he did something different.
Right. Right.
And I had to navigate that with my kids and tell them, yeah, I know dad does it this way and I do it this way.
So that's actually something we can model for the kids, that we can have two different ideas, that we can still be in partnership and teammates and love each other and not necessarily agree.
I think as long as it's conveyed without judgment on the other parent.
Yeah, yeah. Right.
Right. Because I had, so in our house, it was around punishment and discipline. I had my way and my husband pretty much came from the opposite direction. I disagreed with him. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I trusted that my kids were going to come out okay being exposed to these different styles and different things were going to come out of it. They were going to have one relationship with me and a different relationship with my husband, and that was okay.
Yeah. It occurs to me some of the trouble could be, you know, kids playing one parent against the other. I mean, because when they can tell there's a distance, like, oh, I can get in there and I have wiggle room now, potentially. There's got to be a certain amount of alignment, even if you see it differently, right?
That's absolutely true. And so for us, the way we navigated that part and the way I say with my clients is, look, if your spouse said no screen time right now, and you think that wasn't the right time to give that message, you're going to have to eat that. Don't play into it yourself, right? If you create that gap, and you say, no, I'm going to say the opposite of my spouse. Sometimes this happens by mistake. That's okay. But, you know, as a rule, I stand behind what my spouse says. And then later I can take it up with him and say, hey, you know what? Next time this comes up, I wasn't comfortable with how this was handled. I think we could have done something else.
So don't intervene in the moment or under what people would consider undermining each other, right? In front of the kids, unless it's somehow an emergency or urgent, right?
Yeah. Or sometimes it happens by mistake, but as a rule, yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So there's room for kids to see us as two different parents with two different sets of approaches, that there are differences. This isn't going to, you know, totally confuse them or something. It's going to make some sense.
I don't think it's confusing. I think on the contrary, I think it's a-realistic.
Yeah.
And sets them up with a realistic blueprint of what a marriage looks like. And also, I think it's empowering for them. You know, here is my approach. Here is, you know, your father's approach. And ultimately, you get to choose what your approach is going to be when you're a grown up, and it might be something completely different.
Okay. So for somebody that is concerned, like, wow, I've got all these ideas about parenting and my partner's doing it differently. Should they try to talk to their partner? How should you approach some of these difficulties if it actually concerns you? Like, you know, my kids now are grown, but I remember having those feelings. Like, you're actually never physically damaging the kids, nothing like that. But thinking, getting angry or something is going to cause them harm. And I was super upset about this. And I didn't know how to talk about it with my partner at the time.
I've been there too. And I had to really get super grounded in myself and remind myself, A, my children are more resilient than I give them credit for.
Mm-hmm.
B, so am I. And so is my marriage. And, you know, I think sometimes we need to take a longer view on things than what we see in the moment where, you know, things are heated and you have big feelings about something. So first of all, I always gave myself some time to sit with it. And if it's really something that bothers me, sure, I would talk to my husband about it, but it was never from a place of, I need to convince you because you're wrong and I'm right.
Mm.
It was more from a place of, this is my worldview on this topic. This is how I see it. And I think what you're doing could be interpreted in this way by our children, and I don't feel super comfortable with it. But again, it was never from an attachment to, you need to change how you're behaving. I always gave that space and the respect for my husband because he's not making stuff up just to be mean or to be a bad parent, right? I always operated under the assumption, and I think this is true for all of us, we should operate under the assumption that every parent is trying to be the best parent they can be and do everything they can with the tools they have and the life experience that they bring, right? So my husband, even in the moments when I thought, you know, this is not your best parenting, I still knew this is everything he has in this moment. So I have to accept that.
Yeah, because you know he wants the best for your children. I mean, sometimes I'm encouraging people, like, let's back up here to the values you've got. You want your kids, I'm sure you guys are on the same page about wanting thriving, happy people, you know, that's the outcome you're looking for. It's just different strategies, perhaps.
Exactly. And the truth is, you don't know exactly how things land with your children. I think a lot of times we think, oh, my kids are going to think whatever. And it turns out the kids interpreted it an entirely different way.
Yeah.
So sometimes when it really grated on my nerves, I would go later with the kids and I would talk to the kids about it. What did you think about what dad said? How did that make you feel? Again, very careful.
I was going to say, boy, you'd have to be careful not to be throwing your...
Yes.
Right. Right.
I never threw him under the bus again, because before I opened my mouth, I remember my husband is doing the best he can. And he is, in fact, an incredibly devoted husband, father, person, right? So he is. That's why I married him in the first place. So, you know, I would at least open up a space where my children could talk about their feelings and I wouldn't say anything about it. All I wanted was for them to have a place to express feelings. That's it. And then I walk away.
Yeah. And it strikes me that it's actually way more harmful to the kids to throw your partner under the bus or to speak badly about them or to be shaming or blaming or whatever. What you demonstrate in your relationship with your partner in terms of respect and everything else is going to have way more impact on the kids than whether somebody punishes or takes away their allowance or whatever, right?
100%. I think we often underestimate the blueprint that we're setting them up for. We think, oh, I'm going to teach them this and this and this lesson without really understanding what we're modeling for them.
Yeah. Hey, this is Jess. I'm just taking a quick break, and I want to make sure you know about the guide I wrote about how to talk to your partner about sexual concerns. This comes up a lot in my practice. People have struggles, and it takes them so long to bring it up with their partner. They're afraid that that conversation is going to go badly, their partner's going to be upset, the partner's going to be defensive, or they just don't know how to talk about sex and sexual problems. Common problem. So I wrote this guide that really helps you address this. It helps you prepare for the conversation, how to introduce the conversation, and then tips about how to actually get through the conversation so that you can change things with your partner as a team. If you are interested in this guide, you can find it at bettersexpodcast.com/guide. Again, bettersexpodcast.com/guide. Happy to send it to you. So how much in your work with people do you have to take apart how they were raised? That's our first blueprint for parenting, right? And plenty of people don't necessarily even question it. Like, it must be good. My parents did it. I came out okay. That's what, you know, like, we don't even think to wonder if any of this could be improved or, you know, done differently, right?
Right. And I think this, you know, for me personally, I was always a critical thinker. I question everything. So for me, I questioned the ways in which I was raised. When I became a parent and I started getting triggered left, right, and center by my children, I said, okay, I got to back up for a minute and reevaluate everything I thought I knew about what it means to be a good parent and what it means to be a good kid, a good in...
Yeah, air quotes there, right?
Air quotes, yeah. And I had to really question that. And if you don't question that, then yes, you fall into this autopilot pattern of either you do exactly what your parents did, or you think you're doing something completely different because, you know, we all think we want to take the good from our parents and leave the bad, but you can't. You can't just pick and choose. You end up repeating everything unless you become aware of those patterns. And unless you've done some of the work to understand how it replays and manifests in your own life.
All right. So what are some of the really hot topics that parents will disagree about?
I could talk about,
you know, in terms of parenting issues, what are, okay, pick a few favorites or the biggest ones that come up the most commonly.
How to correct behavior is, I would say, the top, because parents disagree on what is the right course of action. This ties in with the question of how to set boundaries and what are boundaries, how to set them, how to enforce them, how to correct unwanted behavior. I would say that is one of the biggest landmines between parents.
Mm-hmm.
Education is another one. What kind of school, what after school, what do we expect of our children now and in the future in that regard. And I think in general, there is often a mismatch between parents' expectations of how kids should be. And that creates conflict between the parents.
Right. So how do people handle that if they've got two different views about how we're going to impact behavior? I mean, so here's where I'm thinking, okay, you've got some ideas about the most effective and least stressful ways to correct behavior, I'm sure. But if two people see that differently, how should they take that apart? Or do they? Are we back to where, oh, you do you, I do me, we're okay that we do this so differently?
So most people, I would say, would not be okay with you do you and I do me.
Okay.
Most people don't take that approach. I think in general, and this is true for any parenting challenge or struggle, people first look to put out the fire. They look for a tip, a strategy, a trick, a script, something. So oftentimes we'll either buy a book on parenting that addresses a particular issue we're facing, or we ask a parent, a fellow parent, or we ask the advice of our own parents. You know, we just kind of look for a quick fix. What do I do? Tell me what to do and I'll do it. And that works for to some degree. It works in the short term. Sometimes it doesn't work at all, but it can work in the short term. The problem with that approach is that if you don't also do the deeper work of understanding why your child is behaving the way they're behaving and why it bothers you so much, then you will ultimately end up either back in square one or worse.
Oh, so that could be a difference too, right? It bothers me so much and it doesn't bother you. Right. Between parents. Why is this such a big deal to you? Why are you getting so upset?
Absolutely. And that has to do with the fact that we are different people. And what triggers me or bothers me is not going to bother you. And then that begs the question, okay, why isn't it bothering you? Mm-hmm. Or on the flip side, why does this bother you so much? Like, relax.
Can you give an example?
I would say I have many clients with teenagers. Teenagers are notoriously slobs, right? They come home, they throw the backpack on the floor, shoes are somewhere in the hallway, coat is thrown on the sofa. They prepare themselves a snack, which is already like major, but they left everything on the kitchen counter,
right?
One parent just walks by and doesn't even notice that there's, you know, stuff to pick up everywhere. The other parent is having a fit. The other parent is constantly picking up and with every pickup getting more and more frustrated and upset.
Yeah.
So that's an example of, you know, one parent is like, relax, dude, it's fine. Like, so what? So not, it wasn't, you know, things aren't perfectly tidy in our house. And the other parent is, don't you see everything all over the place? So that's an example that I see a lot with my clients.
So how do they build compassion for each other or teamwork, I guess, especially, you know, if one person's triggered by something like that?
Right. So there are multiple levels and angles to address this from. First, with regards to the child, certainly if it's a teenager, we have to create a certain relationship, rapport, cooperation and teamwork between the child and the parents. Because if you are 15 years old and, or 16 and you still cannot put your shoes somewhere where I'm not going to trip over them, then I have to ask why. Okay, is something going on with this child that they're so overwhelmed that they can't even put their shoes away? Mm-hmm. Sometimes the answer is, yes, something's going on with the child and we have to address that. Sometimes the answer is no. And then we have to keep digging and asking, okay, what is going on at the level of family connection that the child won't even cooperate on this very minor issue? So there are a lot of levels that we can look into it with regards to what is happening for the kid and what is happening in the relationship between the parent and the kid. Then we also have to look at the parent.
Right.
If you are the parent who's getting super upset over this, we have to ask why. Why are you getting super upset? How is this related to the way you were brought up? How is this related to your worldview? What is going on for you when your child chronically is untidy? So it has to be dealt with at multiple levels, not just the surface level fix, which is typically is double down. You double down on rules, taking away privileges. You can't get the car until you can consistently put your shoes away, something like that, right?
But the answer isn't just, oh, I shouldn't care, right? Like, it must be some balance of I shouldn't get so triggered, but I should also be figuring out how we get more cooperation in our household. There's some middle ground there.
Absolutely. Okay. So, right. The parent who doesn't care can continue to not care and yet work on having better cooperation with the kid. So it could not bother me, but at the same time, I know, you know, I have to work on this with my child because at this age, there is no reason why my child is not capable of hanging up their coat when they walk in the door, right? That's mm-hmm. kind of a bare minimum requirement of a human being who lives in a house with other people. Right. When you live on your own, you do whatever you want. Like, I don't care. You can leave the peanut butter and jelly jars open all day. But if we live together in a household, then there are certain agreements of how we behave in this house.
So I'm thinking about more clients, right? But we maybe have our ideas about how we want to parent. And then we get in the thick of it on a Thursday evening and we get, you know, we flip out or whatever. We get triggered, we get upset. We're not doing what we agreed to do with our partner, right? We have the strategy. This is how we're going to handle little Johnny. And then we we don't. How can the other person support that parent who's kind of losing it, who's getting triggered, is maybe upset, isn't quite at their best? How can that be navigated as a couple so it's not just shaming the parent that's kind of losing it?
Right.
But also isn't just carte blanche, like, yeah, go ahead and yell and scream, even though we agreed that that's not going to be good for the kids.
Right. That's a great question. And so I think first, compassion. I think you have to approach this with compassion, again, from the point of view of, this is the best my partner can do right now. Even though it's not a lot.
It doesn't look good.
Right? It doesn't look good. This isn't what we agreed on. My partner is acting out from a place of pain. And so can I have compassion for my partner who's losing it, right? This is an adult, kind of like an adult tantrum, if you will, when you completely lose it. How much pain must my partner be in to not be able to self-regulate at all in this moment? At the same time, so I can have compassion for my partner in that moment, but at the same time, no, we need to do something about this, right? We can't let I can't just sit here and be like, oh, I'm so compassionate towards my partner. Meanwhile, they're losing it 10 times a day. No, yeah. That has to be addressed. But as it is being addressed and as it is a process, right? It's not overnight that your partner is going to completely change. But if you are both committed to making this work as a family unit, and if you're both committed to your own growth, you will see change and you will see incremental results day by day.
So what are some of the strategies couples might use in those moments? Like, they're certainly talking about it later away from the kids when, you know, all, but in the moment.
Yeah.
What are some ways couples might navigate that to minimize the, what I want to say damage, but that might be too strong a word, but, you know, to intervene and allow something different to happen besides yelling and screaming or whatever that still feels supportive.
Right. I tell parents to make a plan in advance. So to know that as they are working together as a couple or as individuals on changing and evolving themselves, they can make a pact. When I lose it, come and put a hand on my shoulder. It will remind me, like, we have an agreement. It will remind me I need to take a break. I need to give myself a timeout. So I think when parents can make some kind of plan together, like as a team, I'm not going to shame you. I'm not going to yell at you. I'm not going to say anything in front of the kids. I'm just going to come over and gently put my hand on your shoulder. And that will remind you that you're escalating. And maybe you need to just take a pause, gather yourself, come back, and we can continue.
Yeah. What are, maybe it's too big a question, but I'm trying to think what, I guess if you had top tips for couples navigating, especially when they have differences like that, actionable tips in the moment or plans they should be making ahead of time, are there other things that come to mind?
So every family is going to handle this in a different way because there really are an infinite amount of ways to handle it. But in general, you can go about this on your own and try to navigate it and figure it out. To be honest, most people do this. However, there is a limited window of opportunity while your children are still living with you. And I know that when your children are very young, that window seems very far away.
Yeah, but I can tell you,
but you and I know it's not. Exactly. It goes by really fast and it's a cliche, but it's true cliche. So I think working with someone, sometimes it needs to be a therapist if there are some big issues that need to be dealt with. But most of the time, for most families, a coach is enough to help parents navigate with each other, navigate with their kids. It's not just because you can't see your own blind spots. You can't. None of us can. It's also a tool that will accelerate the pace at which you make progress. Because if you do it alone, you can do it alone. But, you know, what if it takes you 20 years? Meanwhile, your children have left the house. So it's kind of...
You'll do a really great job with your grandkids, right?
Exactly. You'll set yourself up to be a great, an excellent grandparent. But if you want to have the impact in those critical years where your children are still living with you, and certainly if you've got teens, that window is very narrow. And there's probably some, a decade plus of, you know, damage control that we need to do. So I can't tell you how many parents have said to me, I wish I'd asked for help sooner. Mm. How many decades or years have I wasted that I could have made progress in 6 months of coaching or 12 months of coaching? So, you know, I think the fact that people are listening to your podcast and seeking out help already tells me that these are not people who are going to make that mistake of waiting.
Is it ever too late?
No, I have clients with adult children.
Ah.
And it is absolutely never too late. I have gone through this process with my own parents in my 40s.
Wow.
So no, it is never too late.
Okay.
But having said that, you want to enjoy the kids when they're still kids.
Yeah. And I suppose every parenting coach is a little bit different, but it sounds like you work with couples. Like part of what parent coaching can be is about helping two people navigate this together, despite the way they see this differently.
So yes, I work both ways. I mean, sometimes it's only one parent that comes and sometimes it's both. But what I've found a really beautiful thing that I've seen when both parents come together is the ways in, I think this is unexpected for many of them, but the ways in which this really deepens their relationship. And as you know, and as you stated in the beginning of our conversation, that has ripple effects outside of parenting.
Right, right. All right. So last question, which I don't even quite know how to put in words, but I want to give you a chance to sort of speak to the promise or what does the world look like when we do this well? Like, why care so much about parenting? Paint a picture of what life could be like now and in the future that's worth doing this well?
That's a great question. And I think it goes back to the fact that I think for most parents, I would even dare to say all parents, parenting is the most important role in our lives. No matter how accomplished we are, no matter how capable we are, no matter how successful we are in other areas of our lives, ultimately, it always comes back to this. When you look back at your life, what is the one thing you are most proud of? It is your children. And I think that is, if that is not the number one motivator, I don't know what is. And I think doing this work, what I've seen over and over with every client, every couple, every parent, is I've seen this work not only deepens their connection with their children, it deepens their connection with themselves, and it completely changes the dynamic of the family, and it changes how they carry themselves in the world. So not only do they stop yelling and feeling guilty and feeling like a bad parent, but what they gain within themselves is the confidence and the relationship that they've always wanted to have with this family that they've worked so hard to build.
Yeah, beautifully said. So what do you want to say about where people can find you, what you might have available for people as resources? You know, where do they go if they want to know more about conscious parenting specifically, but even some of these ideas about working with their partner?
So my website is sagacitylab.com. And I'm also on Instagram _RachelDuffyCoach_. And you can also find me on Facebook. So anybody can reach out to me. I would be more than happy to have a call with your audience and see if there's a way that I can support them and help them.
Great. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Jessa. I loved being here.
You've been listening to Better Sex. Please visit our website, bettersexpodcast.com, for show notes and additional episodes.
And that's a wrap for today. I really hope you enjoyed the episode. If you are enjoying the podcast, if some of this material resonates with you and you would like to make a difference and make sure that this keeps coming out in the world once a week, ongoing, there are a couple things you could do to show your appreciation. The first would be to go to iTunes and rate and review the show. That really helps us be found by new listeners when you review the show on iTunes. You can find a link at bettersexpodcast.com/iTunes. The other thing I want to invite you to consider is becoming a Patreon. For a small monthly pledge, you get some benefits. So for $2 a month, you get advance access to every single episode. For $5 a month, you get a chapter of my upcoming new book. And for $10 a month, I host quarterly get-to-know-you and question-and-answer chats over the web, and you get invited to that. I would love to have your membership in that become part of the Better Sex family. You can find a link at bettersexpodcast.com/Patreon, which is P-A-T-R-E-O-N. Again, thanks for listening. I'm glad you're here. Feel free to comment, ask questions, get in touch. I'd love to hear from listeners. Thanks.